Well, good morning and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM, the voice of the Tri-County. With me this morning, I am pleased to have a longtime acquaintance, friend, one of 13 children here in Jerseyville, Illinois, Jim Shell. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Of course, Jim, one of 13 children. That's pretty amazing today. Very amazing.
It's very rare, I would say.
Yeah, I mean,
today's world for sure.
Nobody does that anymore.
No.
No. And you were the baby of the 13.
I was the youngest, yes. I was the number lucky 13, and that's my lucky number, but yes.
It is your lucky number?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I've known a lot of the Shells. There's a lot of Shells, so it's easy to know a lot of Shells. Know a lot. You're all good guys. All good ladies, guys.
Thank you.
Over the years.
That's a tribute to my mother.
To your mother.
That is. Yes.
What was it like growing up? I know you're the baby. What was it like at the Shell family household growing up, one of 13?
Crowded.
Yeah.
For sure. there was always something going on. There was always people in the house. Me being the youngest, you know, my older siblings were they were in college when I was little. So my sister Barb, who's the oldest, was 18 years apart between me and her. And she was a senior, or she would have been a junior in college, I believe, when I was born. And then my brother Wayne was in the seminary, in college seminary. And then my two other next brothers were in the seminary in high school. So I really didn't know them very well. I didn't get to see them that often. I mean, they'd only come home for Christmas. They'd come home for holidays. They didn't even come home for the summer that much, for the most part. So we really had the top six and the bottom six. So my older sister, Janet, who is like 8 years above me, is we'd always say Janet on down, and then the older group. So, I mean, that was that. But we always had, there was always people there, and there was always,
Well, there's always people. There's always
13, and one of Mom's things was there's always room for more. So we'd have more than 13 at the dinner table, definitely every night.
Every night.
Every night there'd be somebody, one of my brother's friends or one of my sister's friends, or somebody be there, or somebody, you'd wake up in the morning and you just see people come down the steps that, you know, that you hadn't seen before, you didn't know. That was just one of my brother's buddies that spent the night, and maybe they had a long night and they just stayed there. So, and that was not an issue for Mom. She was always good with that.
It sounds like your mom was a very Christian woman. I mean, she had three sons going to seminary.
She was very devout Catholic, I'd say. Her and my dad both. I would say both were that. Now, my dad passed away in 1969, so I was only 2 years old at the time. He passed away at the age of 44. But yes, they were both very much devout Catholics. She continued on that faith and really established my faith, I think, in general, as far as, you know, I left and came back and things of that nature. But she really instilled in us the importance of our faith and the importance of God. And it's filled, I think, all 13 of us in some form of matter that it stuck with us. And I thank her for that. I really do.
And when you say you left and came back, you mean you left the church a little bit?
Well, you go to college and you just don't go to mass. You don't go to church. You know, God's not that important in your life. Yeah. That's what I mean. I mean, where he's not important, where today he's very important. He's number one for me. So,
okay.
And that's the instance, I mean. And you know, there's several of them in the family. I think there's only five of us or four of us that are Catholic still to this day, but all of them are churchgoers. You know, for the most part, everybody has some faith, some denomination that they attend to regularly.
I know there was a lot of people in the house, but what was like the demeanor in the house? What are the rules? What went on in a household like that?
Work. That's the other thing she really taught us was work ethic. I mean, so with her being the only one that was, so to say, bringing in an income and raising 13 kids.
How about your father?
So, well, at the time, like I said, he passed when I was two, so that's what I know.
Okay.
But prior to that, he owned a gas station. He owned Phillips 66 here in town, which is located where CVS is now, but it used to be FS. So prior to that, it was Phillips 66 gas station. So he had owned that for several years.
There was a recent photo of that in front of that station was your mom and dad and 12 children.
Right.
And you weren't in the picture.
I was not in the picture. I was not born yet. So, yeah, I think Stanley put that up there, Stanley Sinclair. And I'm not on Facebook, but that's, yeah, but my brother's sister sent it to me. But the story behind that photo is that there were six boys, six girls at the time. My dad owned it, Phillips 66, and it was taken in 1966. So I think all the sixes is what kind of brought that photo about. And then it got put into, I think, Phillips 66's quarterly magazine or something of that nature. But it was taken during the Easter time, so I might have been in it, but just not present, so to say.
You know okay, what I mean? I got you. So you're talking about that growing up in the household, work, going to church.
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, going to church, work. I mean, my mom owned several businesses. So her end of job at the end of her career was she was the district manager for the Alton Telegraph, which meant she was in charge of all the paper boys in Jersey County. So not only did she have 13, but she had, you know, probably 25 boys that she had to deal with on a daily basis. But the other thing that, you know, we were in charge of the Post-Dispatch, the Globe Democrat. We had the we had an ice business. She ran the gas station. So our days, typically a lot of times our days would start at, not mine necessarily when I was that young, but my older brothers, their day started at 4 in the morning, folding papers and delivering, you know, 3 in the morning delivering or folding the papers. The Post in the morning. And we had to deliver the Post in the morning. And then they had to go and we had to deliver the ice. We had to do the ice business and deliver to all the stores.
The ice business. Explain that a little bit. There's a few people who might not realize the ice business.
Well, the ice business was that, you know, a lot of people didn't have, well, there was not ice makers and definitely refrigerators back then. And sometimes a lot of people didn't have trays, but the stores, you know, all the big, you know, the ice chests that you'll see out in front of, like the Casey's and things of that nature, we would fill those up. But also we had a nice shed at our house. It was at the gas station. Once she sold the gas station, moved to our house. But, you know, ice would come in 100-pound blocks of ice. And we'd have to, you know, people would come up and fill their coolers. They'd buy, you know, maybe a 25-pound block. And we, you know, we'd cut it up through with an ice pick and sell them the 25 blocks. But we also serviced all the, you know, the grocery stores in town and all the gas stations in town with their ice. So we were doing that business also.
And then the papers, you delivered those by bicycle, right?
Telegraph we would deliver by bicycle, the Globe, and then Globe was also an afternoon paper. We'd deliver a lot of that by bicycle, but the Post, in the morning ones, we delivered that by car.
Okay.
And there was like 3 or 4 of the boys, and then, you know, I started having to do it when I was about seven years old is when I had to start. So I was up at 5 every morning delivering the paper, you know, on the weekends. And so,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you grew up in town.
Grew up in town. Yes.
Now where was your house at? I know there was a particular spot.
It was right next to the Pizza Hut, which, it got tore down and Sonic was built, but yeah, it was right next to the Pizza Hut in town where I think, Scooters is now. So yeah, it was right there.
You have an interesting story about, didn't you rent to the house next door? You guys owned the house.
So we owned the house next door, and we rented that out for several different businesses throughout. Yeah.
A pizza business?
We rented it out to a pizza business, which was, I believe it was called Alfonso's. Now, I'm not quite sure. I mean, my brother said it was something else, but it wasn't the original Alfonso's. Let's make it clear. It wasn't the original Alfonso's from Jerseyville that Mike started. But it was a family out of Chicago, and they were there for a couple of years, I would say, and then they had some troubles with narcotics, and there was found out it was a mafia ring that was pushing narcotics through Illinois into Kansas City and into Missouri, and some of the owners rented out to that. Mom didn't realize that until she saw their names in the paper several years later that those were part of the, yeah.
All right. I'll be darned. That's crazy.
So it's kind of a crazy story, yeah. But that was that building was a bus station. We ran the bus station through there. That's where we did our, you know, folded our papers at. Bob French bought it and made it turn into Dialtronics for several years. It was a pizza place. A lot of people remember. I don't remember this, but my brothers remember that, or not pizza place, but it was a hamburger place, something cafe. And he was one of the originals of the food truck. They called it the Maggot Truck up to Jerseyville High School on lunch hours and sell hamburgers.
The Maggot Truck.
They called it the Maggot Truck, they said.
Oh, you know.
I know, and they'd sell the heck out of hamburgers out of there, they said. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you went to high school. I did hear a story. Okay. Uh-oh. And you'll have to, a story, just because I've been around the shells, you know, a bit, that when you turned a certain age, your mom said, okay, 18. What happened when you turned 18 at the shell house?
Typically, when you turned 18, you were let known that you were no longer living in that household. You can come back and stay. I mean, you can come back and visit, but this is not your house anymore, and you don't live here anymore. And she would sometimes pack a suitcase and have it there and say, "You got to go."
Yeah,
you know,
I heard
you
gotta that.
Go. So she didn't do that to the girls, though. It was just
just the boys.
Just the boys.
So you lost the boys lost their bedrooms.
The boys lost their bedrooms. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did you lose yours?
She gave me that speech, but you know, a lot of them went off to college. So it's not like they were, you know, destitute, so to say. But a lot of them went off to college. But there's a few she went and rented out apartments for them paid for the first month's rents and says, "This is where you live now." There's definitely that happened too.
That's crazy. So you went to college.
I did.
Where'd you go?
I went to a small college up in North Carolina called Warren Wilson College, mm-hmm. and then went there for 2 years on a theater scholarship, and then I came back to and then finished up in Eversville at SIUE.
Okay.
Yeah. Putting a degree in theater.
So you were in theater?
Yeah.
Acting?
Yeah.
Cool. So then what happened? Where'd you go from there?
My goals were basically, I really wanted to stay in theater for the most part, and to make it in the theater business, you really need to go to Chicago, you need to go to New York, or you need to go to L.A. in that area. My plans were to go to Chicago first and maybe head towards New York, or just see where it takes me from there. I had some friends prior that I was in school with that were in both places that could get me kind of a start, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that was kind of the plan, but then, you know, as you know, sometimes you meet somebody in college that you love and fall in love with, and that's who I met was my wife Missy, and so that plan changed.
Yeah,
and so I stuck around the area.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
did some things in St. Louis. I did some small industrial films and things of that nature.
Okay.
And so for a little while, but after that, I went to go work for a motivational company called Successories, and I worked with this company. They had retail locations where they sold motivational things, but motivational prints, cards, and things that they were in the malls. But and I worked for a franchisee that was the largest franchisee. We grew it into being the largest franchisee of the company. But one of the things I did was I would bring in local speakers like the Zig Ziglars, the Mark Canfields and people like that into the area.
So you met Zig Ziglar?
So I've met Zig Ziglar. I met Mark Canfield, who did the Chicken Soup for the Soul books.
Oh, yeah. Read all those books.
Yeah. So a lot of those guys. And I kind of bring them, help, you know, facilitate bringing them in into our stores. And they do their book signings. And they would do speaking engagements and set them up with speaking engagements. Or if they have already had an engagement in town, then I would try to get them into our stores because we were all about motivational. So I did that for 10 years. And his stores, he grew retail-wise, and I, you know, became director of operations for him and did that. And then he inspired me to go into business for my own self. And so after that, I owned a Pepperidge Farm distributorship for 4 years and had a location out of
Pepperidge?
Pepperidge Farm, the bread, Pepperidge Farm bread.
Okay.
There's the cookies, and then there's the bread. And everybody wanted me to have the cookies because they liked the cookies, but the bread was good. So I owned a Pepperidge Farm distributorship out of, in my territories out of St. Louis. And I did that for 4 years. And a lot of long hours, a lot of, you know, that day you start your day at 2 o'clock in the morning, didn't end until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And for me to continue, I was going to have to grow it. I was going to have to bring on more help, and I was going to have to bring on another vehicle and things of that nature. And I just decided, you know what? I want to do something else. And so I decided to get into farming, and that's what I've been doing for like the last 20 years.
And pharmaceuticals?
Pharmaceuticals, yeah.
Sales?
I've been doing pharmaceutical sales for last 20 years.
Yeah. What did you sell? What kind of drugs?
I've sold the gamut, really. I've sold in every space except for oncology, really. So I've sold with cardiologists. I've sold with endocrinologists. Sold diabetes. I've sold statins. I've sold high blood pressure. I've sold prenatal vitamins. I've sold pediatricians cold and cough medicine or pink eye medication. I really kind of sold the gamut. I've been through Yeah, just about every space you can be except for oncology. In the last 4 years, I really focused on, I was in the ophthalmology space, which is calling on optometrists and ophthalmologists in their surgery centers and within their offices and selling them drops for cataract surgeries and for certain eye infections and things of that nature.
I see. So whenever you get hired to work in pharmaceutical sales, do you go to class or do they teach you how to sell pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, they do. One of the things they require, and I'm not sure they do this to this day, but you had to have a college degree is one of the requirements. Mm-hmm. But they would sell, yeah, they would teach you that you'd have to learn the product. They bring in your typical, you know, you typically have what they call a home study, which they send you all the books of all the medications you're going to be selling. And within the 2 weeks, you're studying the material, and you're taking tests daily. And you're not only learning your medication, but you're learning about the disease state. You're learning about your competitor's medication. You're learning about the delivery systems, meaning how the drug is delivered into the body and where it goes to and what's the effects of that. And then after that 2 weeks of that as at home, then you would go typically to the corporate office. And then you have another 2 weeks of intense study and intense sales training. And when you the nerve-wracking part is the first day you get to the home office, you take a test, and you have to pass that by 80% or more. They send you home.
I see.
And you're no longer employed. And they're testing you. Like I said, they're testing you throughout those 2 weeks. And you have to. You're required to get 80% on those tests also. But you can retake those at home. But you're not allowed to retake the test once you get that first one there. So that first one there, and then you got to take an exit test. And from all the new stuff you learned and the other stuff. And so if you don't make an 80% again, then they'll send you home. They say, thank you, but you're no longer employed with us.
You know, as of in the last year or two, especially, you know, pharmaceuticals, big pharma has had getting a bad rep on a few things. And you were involved in that as far as, I mean, selling pharmaceuticals.
Correct.
What's your take on that? Can you comment at all on that situation?
Yeah, well. Yeah, they've gotten a bad rap, and I think personally, deservedly, they deserve that.
What do you think about the vaccine? What's your opinion on that?
That's a hot topic, Chris.
Yes, it's a hot topic.
You know what?
Are you a non-vaxxer?
I am a non-vaxxer. I've never been vaccinated. Yes. So I don't believe. I mean, not that I don't believe in vaccines. That's not the issue. There's plenty of vaccines that are out there that are beneficial and helpful. It was just the COVID vaccine was not studied or not tested, and they didn't go through regulations like every other company would have to go through.
But they were in a hurry.
That's exactly right. They were in a hurry, and as much as I hate to say it because it's my industry, but it's about the almighty dollar, and how can they make that quick? Okay. Yeah. And that's why they were in a hurry, and they knew that there was money at stake to be at stake. So, and they knew a lot of the, they knew also, it's been proven, and you know, I'm not just a.
It's not your opinion.
It's not my opinion. It's been proven out there many times the outcomes of it and the. I'm losing train of thought, but you know, the side effect profile. They knew what the side effect profile was going to be, for sure, and they knew the dangers of it, and they did not. They weren't honest to us about it.
Yeah.
And. There is laws out there that says that we should not have to take a medication that is experimental, and that's exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. It was an experimental medication, and they created certain laws to push that through.
Some people were going to lose their job unless they took the vaccine.
I was one of those persons that was. I was one of those persons who was in that predicament. Much so. I had to go through. I filed for a. Religious exemption.
Yeah.
It was denied. I had to go through a board to maintain my job. There was 10 of us that did it, and only two of them kept their jobs, and I was lucky enough to keep mine, and I don't know why I did. I mean, I truly believe that's the Lord. I don't know why I did, but it was a stressful time because that, you know, we weren't the only ones. The farm wasn't the only ones. Everybody in the country was making that demanding, you know, and it was just crazy.
Very crazy. But you're not in pharmaceutical sales now.
At this point right now, no. I'm in transition, so to say. I'd like to get back into it. For the last three companies that I've worked for were startup companies, and I like working for a startup company because when you work for a startup company, it's kind of high risk, high reward, And what that means is that it's typically a brand new drug that's coming to the market. So you're launching a drug. It's a company that if it does really well and it takes off like a, you know, like, like the blue pill or something like that, if it really takes off, for example, then you can make a lot of money and you can get stock options. You can be a part of that company. You can help that company grow. But if it doesn't take off and it doesn't do well, then there's layoffs. And like the last three I've been with, or they get bought out. If it takes off and it does really well also, then you get bought out by one of the bigger boys. And that's okay too, because now you got stock options, you got equity in the company. And so that's rewarding also financially. But the last two were got out of the last three, one didn't make it at all. And two of them got bought out. And so, yeah, so it's kind of, you know, working for the smaller company is high risk, high reward.
And we need to let everybody know right now, you're helping Rick Edwards out.
I am.
At the Terrapin.
I am.
Doing some bartending while you're still looking for a pharmaceutical job.
Exactly.
Are you enjoying that?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. No, I do. I love working with Rick. Rick's great to work for.
Yeah.
My mom worked for Rick a little bit in the realty business when Century 21. But yeah, working for Rick's been great. You know, a lot of people like you come in, I get to see that, you know, and a lot of people from town that I had a lot of friends and just old acquaintances I get to see that I didn't get to see much because when I was in pharma, I was traveling a lot. I didn't get to town much. And so I enjoy it. I just enjoy talking to people. I enjoy talking to people and visiting and learn some new bartending skills and learn some new things. That's always exciting too. It's always fun.
Yeah, it
stuff
is.
Stuff I can take with me.
Yeah, the Terrapin is a nice asset.
Yes.
To the city of Jersey.
I would totally agree with 100%.
Yes.
100%. The pizza is very good. The food is very good. The drinks are very good.
Got
I would
some good
agree.
Good cocktails.
That's right. Exactly. And I can make a specialty, whatever kind you want in there when you come in. But the other great thing is, you know, it's his view is it's kind of a music atmosphere, a music venue. So there's no sports played on the TV. It's just, you know, he does nothing but music. And I'm a big music guy. So that's the other thing that me and Rick connect a lot. Rick's heavily into music, and I've been heavily into music since I was a kid. I mean, my brothers had a bluegrass band. I was in a bluegrass band.
Mm-hmm.
We've just been a very musical family. Our family, everybody in our family can either play an instrument or sing or something, do something. And so music's been a big part of my life, and that's what Rick's all about, and that's what I really like, that atmosphere there.
Yeah, he did a heck of a job decorating that.
Oh, place. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's...
And we were both big Dead fans. He's seen a lot of Dead shows. I've been to at least 10 Dead shows, so yeah. Yeah.
Well, Jim, do you have anything else to add to this interview? It's been nice having you.
Oh, I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much. It's been great. Thanks for giving me the time.
Yeah.
You know, so
I love learning your story.
So, yeah, thank you.
So,
thank
you. If you, stop into the Terrapin, have a drink, and
come see me. Please do. Come see me. Yes.
At the Terrapin.
I will set you up for sure. Come get a good pizza, good pie.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Chris.